Hey, this is Todd Stacy. Welcome to In the Weeds with Alabama Daily News. It is Election Day, and I'm once again joined by my friend and political consultant, David Mowry.
What's up?
Hey, Dave.
Everyone's favorite day, right, in the business?
Favorite and the best day and the worst day.
It's definitely the longest, but at least it's over, right?
By the way, when I say friend and political consultant, I don't mean like you're my political consultant, right?
I'm a political consultant.
Yes. Well, I appreciate you coming back on.
Yeah, man.
We got a lot of...
I got some good feedback.
Yeah. People were really interested in... even though I was dog tired that night, and I don't think making much sense, but I'm energized for today. It's been like a big slog up to this point, but let's do it. Let's cast the votes and see what happens.
It's all over but the shouting, right?
As our friend Rick Bragg would say,
it's Super Tuesday, right?
And absolutely,
yeah. You know what the difference is? It's just like regular Tuesday, but large fries.
Well,
election jokes, dad jokes, same thing.
Maybe we'll partake in that later. I do want to give myself a plug here. If you're in the Birmingham TV market, I'll be on Fox 6 WBRC for their election coverage.
Right.
Of course, you can also watch online or on Facebook, but if you're in the Birmingham market, we'll be doing that. Just political analysis. I think they have like a Republican and a Democrat that sort of do their thing, but they wanted me just to sort of give analysis somewhat based on our polling, but also, all right, what do they say? The only poll that matters is Election Day and how that may be compared to things. So anyway, if you're in Birmingham, watch Fox 6 WBRC tonight.
Yeah, a big change from Election Day, even like 5-6 years ago, is how fast everybody reports. Like once they get rolling, and you don't necessarily get it like regionally, because I just remember several, election days where, whatever the key county was in a race, you're like, that's the one that's not coming in. And it just seems like the reporting comes a lot faster and
better, it could be,
which is great.
It could be, we could know by 8 o'clock tonight.
Yeah. I'd say, I think we'll know by 9, right? Everybody, what the percentages were,
Secretary of State will probably have it by 9.
Right.
Which is, pretty good. I remember 2 years ago in 2012, the Republican primary, I guess all the primaries, there was like a sticking point at like 9:30, but after that, everything started coming in. And I think it was Baldwin County that was the big holdout. And that's obviously a ton of votes on the Republican side. So, but one thing that's interesting about Election Day is, as far as working campaigns, is you would think, I bet a lot of people think that, campaigns are just crazy busy on Election Day. And that's true for volunteers, for, a lot of the campaign staff. But, if you're top level staff, if you're the candidate, there's not a whole lot to do.
No. It's right. If you're, what do? You have to do something with the candidate. You have to do something with yourself. I like to read, right? Especially stuff about politics or like political stories. And one of the things that always stuck with me from like way back before I was ever even in the business was that, like you were saying, you think that this is like the Super Bowl day, right? So everybody's, on it and all that. And James Carville and Paul Magawa used to go to a movie. Because like this is back in the day before, if you think about it, like they peaked in like 92, with Clinton. And so before cell phones and really, especially before they were commercially available, I bet you they had one or two phones like on the campaign, and so they just just go to a movie because you have to take your mind off of it and nobody can find you to bother you. And that's the other thing, is that one of the biggest things that you have to do on Election Day and as a consultant just in general is you have to figure out what is actionable and what's noise. Because like if people think that your guy, if they think that turnout is bad for your, if high turnout is bad for your candidate, then every call you get, turnout's going to be terrible. And if bad turnout is good for your candidate, then everywhere you get action, everywhere that you get calls from, it's going to be turnout's higher than it's ever been. It's over, we're screwed, and it just, it cracks me up, because there's nothing you can do about any of that at that point.
Of course. Yeah, hay's in the barn for the large, up to a large degree.
You know, and you, yeah, I mean, if you have a round of, like, if you know there's a place where you have to turn out, then you have a round of calls or a round of volunteers or a round of texts or whatever the communication du jour is. But, I mean, even then, you know, you, aside from, like, knocking on doors and grabbing people and taking them to cars, yeah, you can't really affect turnout.
I'll say this, you know, in different GOTV efforts, because that's what's happening on Election Day, mm-hmm, is you are calling through your universe of voters, and hopefully up to this point, a smart campaign would have culled that very significantly in that, you know, you're no longer talking to the voters that vote every time, right? If you got a perfect four, you know, meaning four out of four times they're going to be at the ballot box, if you've got a, even a three out of four, they're gonna vote, mm-hmm, and they're either gonna vote for you or not. There's probably not anything you can do. Of course, maybe you want to do a little bit of pushes on the threes in your high density areas, but really you're going to the casual voter, the ones and twos that may not get out every time, if you've identified them as somebody that's, you know, a good voter for you. One thing I used to love about early voting, we don't have early voting in Alabama, but except for like the whole absentee thing. But one thing I loved about it in Tennessee was you could spend that month of the, well, I guess it was like 10 days, uh-huh, 10 days leading up to Election Day, pushing people out. You're calling your perfect voters, and you X them off the list. You get a list, yes, every day from Secretary of State saying,
and then you just take them off. Yep.
So by Election Day, let's just say 20% of your electorate voted. That's a pretty high number, but let's just say that's the case. Well, you don't have to worry about them on Election Day. Your universe is totally smaller, which makes you more agile on Election Day. But that's the campaign staff. The candidate, unless you know, some campaigns are doing a bus tour, which is cool and fun. But the candidate honestly needs something to do on Election Day, because otherwise they might actually get in the way.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of times what we would do, especially depending on the size of the race, because if it's, you know, if it's a governor's race or something like that, you probably don't have the time to do this. But on a congressional race or anything below that, you certainly have the time to call, and even, you know, depending on how big it is, you have time to call your finance committee guys and just say thank you and, yeah, hey, you know, I couldn't have got this far without you, and, you know, kind of give them an update and tell them, you know, hey, we expect the, especially if you expect to, if you're one of the candidates in AL 1-2 or the Senate race, and you think you're going to be alive, you know, Wednesday, if you're going to be alive tomorrow, then you need to be calling people and saying, hey, like, this is where it's going to come out, and I need you to do X, Y, and Z. Like, when you wake up tomorrow, I need you to send me the max amount of money or whatever it is that, you know, that you can do.
It's a good point. Yeah, go ahead and call through them. I'm sure they've been doing that to an extent.
Yeah.
Anyway, but yeah.
I got it.
But on election, that's the perfect time to do it.
Because there's less distractions, and you want to, like, you do want to limit access to your candidate. That is one of the big things. You don't want just any Joe Schmo to be able to walk up and get them, because I mean, if you think about it, like, it's nerve-wracking for us, right? I mean, it's very nerve-wracking, especially like if you're the guy that's, you know, put all this together, and they're saying, you know, I hope the, you know, hey, you told me that this is what we were supposed to advertise or whatever, but imagine being the candidate, and, you know, you have to figure everything that you've said or done up to this point is, you know, if you lose, you go home.
Yeah,
career's, you know, not necessarily over, but this phase of it is, and then, you know, you got to figure out what you're going to do with the rest of your, you know.
Yeah. Well, and especially in the Senate race, you've got a lot of that. Like, I mean, Bradley Byrne has given up his seat in Congress. He's, mm-hmm, this is, you know, surely he has other things to do in his career if he loses, but it's a, yeah, this is the big one.
But still, it's a grab for the brass ring, for sure.
And Sessions, same way. I mean, he basically
came out of
retirement. Tuberville obviously doesn't have a political career, but.
But he could go back to Florida.
But I doubt he would run for office again if he lost today.
I don't think he will either.
Well, speaking of the Senate race, let's get into it. And just,
yeah,
you know, that's obviously the biggest thing on the ballot. It's the most watched race. Go back to 2017, ever since Doug Jones beat Roy Moore in that crazy election. Republicans have had their eye on this, right? They wanted to get back this Senate seat, put it back in the red column, which, look, no matter who they nominate, they're going to have a good chance of doing it.
Yes.
But every Republican, at least, you know, at least thought about this. Mm-hmm. Every Republican, at least thought about, oh, yeah, I'd like to run for that. And part of the reason for that is the United States Senate is the coolest club in the world.
It's the best job in politics. I mean, like, if somebody came to me and they said that they wanted to appoint me literally anything, the answer would probably be no, unless it was U.S. Senate. And then I would actually want to do, I would just want it like Jones has from like, from, and I wouldn't want her to go through the first campaign. I would want to do like 2 years and then not run. You know what I mean? Not like, you know, the guys like the placeholder. Remember when Biden went to be VP and then they like, they made his longtime chief of staff, the interim from like November to when they swore in January or whatever. So that guy got to be a senator for 3 months or whatever. I don't want that. I want like, you know, a year and a half, 2 years in the job, you know, and then just not bother to run and then just, you know, be a former senator.
Look, I mean, did you not tell this to Governor Bentley when he was considering?
Right, I mean, right?
You could have been great.
I know.
You know, and no height differential.
Right?
I just figured he interviewed you because he interviewed everybody else.
He did interview a lot of people. I didn't put my name in the hat.
Well, so it's a big election.
It is.
Look, nothing's changed since last time we talked. It's a three-way race. And look, our daily news polling clearly had a top two and Byrne in the back with 17%. But there is nobody that I've talked to, even on the other campaigns, that thinks Byrne is actually that far down.
Right.
I think they all agree. They're right there neck and neck. And anything could happen. The interesting thing about today, because I get asked all the time, I'm sure you get asked too, what's the latest polling or what are you hearing?
Mm-hmm.
First of all, a campaign, one of these Senate campaigns would be foolish to spend money on something like a tracking poll that would be like $15,000, $20,000 at the very end of this campaign when they're going to need the cash the very next day.
Mm-hmm.
So there really isn't any polling. Now, maybe some of the campaigns have something like last-minute internals from 2 weeks ago or something like that, but they certainly haven't shared them, not with me.
Nope.
So we don't know. There's nothing updated telling you, you know, here's the way the winds are blowing. All I'll say is, and we mentioned this a little bit last time, but I went into it in depth in our Inside Alabama Politics edition from last week. The only difference in the polls that I'm seeing is that the internals, both from Sessions and Byrne, that have the leans, right? They're asking people, who do you lean toward? Those have Byrne closer.
Hmm.
In fact, one poll, I think he's second. But
really?
Yeah, the Sessions internal and the Byrne internal both, you know, they push voters a little bit to say.
Yeah, right.
For example, our Daily News Mason-Dixon poll simply asked ballot tests.
Mm-hmm.
Election was held today. Who would you vote for? Jeff Sessions, Tom Tocqueville, Bradley Byrne, on down the list. The pollster did not go in and ask a respondent, all right, well, who would you say you're leaning toward?
Right.
And so, of course, what happens with that is, in our poll, we have a high number of undecideds because people don't really want
to
say, you know, if they don't know, they don't want to say. But in a lean poll, you get a lot
less undecided.
And so in those two polls, they went a significant number went to Bradley Byrne. That is really good news for him. Those polls are also pretty outdated. So mm-hmm. I'll just say that if you're looking at a high number of undecideds on election day, the fact that the only two lean polls we know about seem to shift a lot of undecideds over to Byrne is good news for him.
Yeah, it is.
But again,
that's interesting. I mean, what it could tell you is that he's got the momentum, you know, going into election day. And if you say that, you know, nobody thinks that he's 17 or, you know, that they're in the 30s and he's in the high teens, then you probably need to adjust everybody down a little bit and Bradley up. So let's put him at 24 or 25 and then them at 29 and 27. And then it's you're looking at like a crapshoot tomorrow.
Yeah.
Or, you know. Later today.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And somebody...
Good. That means there'll be excitement.
Well, see, somebody described it as a three-way jump ball.
Yeah.
Which that's pretty tough to win.
Yeah, but. Or a scrum or whatever, yeah. You know. Well, and then, okay, but look, and then you also have Arnold Mooney, who, like, not for nothing, but let's say he gets 1 or 2%, and let's say Moore goes up to 5%. And aren't there is there one other candidate that I'm forgetting?
Stanley Adair.
Yeah, so I mean, I was trying to game out in my mind, like, you know, if the numbers from earlier that we talked about in the last podcast were accurate, then what would happen if the lesser candidates, you know, add up to 7 to 10 points? And what would happen if people are leaning Byrne and then they hear information? Does anybody go, whatever, I'm just going to throw my vote away and vote for one of these clowns? I don't know.
Well, you mentioned Roy Moore. I think I've been asked a lot about his factor in the race. First of all, it is notable and significant that he is not going to even come close to competing in this race. I mean, the fact that 3 years ago he was the nominee,
yeah,
and now he's not even in contention. But, you know, I've got him pulling anywhere from 5 to 10% because he's Roy Moore, and that's just kind of what happens. Mm-hmm. But what if he gets more than that? If he starts getting above that 10%, is that pulling votes away from somebody? I mean, and who is that?
Right.
I mean, I could hear an argument for Tuberville because maybe it's the more casual voter, maybe it's the anti-establishment, you know, and maybe that's... But I can also hear an argument that, like, look, if you're a Roy Moore voter, you're a Roy Moore voter. You were never going to vote for anybody else.
I was
going
to say, conventional wisdom tells you that 5 to 10% were more voters and only more voters. I'm not sure if that's always correct, but I would posit that it probably hurts Sessions because they share the sort of same. They're on the same sort of religious right, real conservative social issues base.
Yeah, makes sense.
None of which has been talked about at all in this race.
Not a lot, no. Jeff Sessions came out with an ad about restoring religious liberty.
Yeah.
And fighting for religious liberty with the church and they breaking the chains and all this. Which I remember at the time, I thought it was really interesting because... It's not something you see talked about a lot, but it goes back to like a Jeff Sessions greatest hits album about, you know, that's who he is. So I totally agree. Another way this came up is this came up with Jeff Poor today on Jeff Poor and I were talking on his radio show. The Dothan market, really Montgomery down to Dothan, has been, I'm not going to say ignored by the Senate candidates, but it's been hard to penetrate in.
Yeah.
It's obviously very small. It's not worth a ton of time. You can, but this time you can actually. They're having a tough time buying ads because Coleman has bought everything.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason I bring it up is that is Roy Moore territory. I remember it in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
I remember it in 2017. Really.
Yes, I mean that's where they had their last rally. Remember, was in Dale County.
Yeah, with what's his name, the guy
Bannon.
Yeah, Steve Bannon. So. You know,
there's a couple factors, and then we'll move on to something else. One thing that I was hip to about, and this is really inside baseball, but I guess we're in the weeds here, is that Tuberville apparently, I have not confirmed this, was not on in the Mobile market.
Mm-hmm.
That's something to, you know. That's something to think about.
Yeah, he kind of seeded the market.
And if I was Bradley, you know. I would have been, and I know he has to compete everywhere else because he's from Mobile, and it's hard to get known in the rest of the state. But if I'm him, while I'm doing that, I'm really trying to turn out my base in Mobile as much as humanly possible.
Yeah.
And because if you can run up the score there, you know, the calculus is just different for everybody else.
Yeah. You think weather plays a factor?
It always does, but an old buddy of mine told me one time, he said, if you lose because it rains on election day, you were never going to win.
Nice.
And that's always suck, because it's, it very rarely were you going to, you know, win by 20 points and then the other guy, you know, wins. Now, if your base is, now we don't necessarily have a ton of, the marginalized communities, for the most part, in Alabama don't necessarily vote in the Republican primary.
Mm-hmm.
But if you were in a place where, like, it rained and you were, like, totally, what's the word? If you were, like, reliant on public transportation or reliant on, like, a phone tree of people to get in cars and go vote or whatever, I'd be worried. But for the most part, the people that are going to vote in the Republican primary, I don't think necessarily qualify for that. So I don't think it really plays a huge factor.
I agree. You know, the only thing is, if it's a we're drinking a bunch of beer here.
Yeah, or my canned iced coffee and your canned seltzer water.
My Perrier.
Yeah, well, I don't want to give anybody a free plug here.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, this is not sponsored by Perrier. What if it were?
That's right. Buffalo Rock, if you're listening.
It'd be like the Ricky Bobby guy.
Right.
The French guy. But, well, as far as voting and rain go, the dedicated voter, nothing's going to stop them from voting. They vote. The casual voter that maybe shows up to the, you know, says, all right, I'm going to vote before work, and it's pouring down rain, and they don't want to get out of their car, maybe they say, well, let's try again at noon. And every time they back it up, it makes it less likely for them to vote. I'm not saying it's going to be a huge factor, but if it's a deluge in North Alabama all day, which right now, you know, and then it's not raining in Mobile and Baldwin until late in the day, I could see a marginal
benefit. Yeah, well, and you know, it's funny you say that, because that is one of the things that they tell people about, like, you know, you ever see those mailers or see the communication that says, do you have a plan to vote? And the reason is that if you think about it, all right, tomorrow I'm going to vote on my lunch hour, then that's what you're doing at your lunch hour unless some kind of emergency comes up. And so what happens to me a lot is, I almost didn't vote in the mayor's race because I had a plan, and then, of course, something came up in the morning, and then I had to do something with one of my kids, and then I had to get something done for a client, you know what I mean? And then at like 3 o'clock, I was like, oh, wow, I should probably go vote. And so but that's why you see that communication that says make a plan to go vote, because the more you back it up, the better chance that something like rain or a kid's football game or whatever, baseball at this point, practice, which, you know, almost stopped me from coming to the podcast here.
I frequently have to be reminded to eat dinner, so.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, speaking of rain and marginalized communities, the actual, where it could have an impact, walk-around communities, the presidential race. Maybe we should have started there.
Yeah, technically it's the top of the ticket.
Well, it is for the President of the United States. I mean, a ton of movement over the last 36 hours.
Yeah.
Pete Buttigieg is out. Amy Klobuchar is out. Both are expected to endorse Biden. I think Amy Klobuchar already did it.
You know,
Pete's probably holding out for a promise, right?
I bet her staff didn't want to be around when she made that decision. Well, I wonder who she beat up before she put out the press release.
Somebody
notoriously
said,
mean to her staff, Amy Kay.
Somebody said, put a comb in her, she's done.
Yeah, there you go. That's strong.
Klobuchar was allegedly caught eating a salad with a
comb.
Comb.
Gross. Yeah, because a staffer didn't bring her silverware on the plane, and so she was like, whatever, it's fine, I'll eat it with this, and ate it with a comb.
That's disgusting.
Well,
you know,
that just makes her sound weird. I've heard some better ones, but, you know, we don't want to air anybody's dirty laundry.
What I do find interesting, we'll get to Alabama in a minute, these two candidates, Buttigieg and Klobuchar, both are vice president-type material.
Mm-hmm.
As far as who you would want to nominate, specifically because they're from the Midwest. That's what the election's coming down to.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's Wisconsin, it's Michigan, it's Pennsylvania. That was, you know, these were battlegrounds in 2016. They're absolutely battlegrounds in 2020. Klobuchar from Minnesota, Pete Buttigieg from Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
I see that as now we're a long way.
You think this is an audition, basically, or a, hey, you know, hey, Joe, if you make it, remember me when?
Them? Absolutely. And I also sense that this is not just, you know, two people out of the goodness of their heart saying, you know what, for
correct,
the good of the party, let's do this. Somebody pushed them, you know, Barack Obama. You never know. I mean, somebody, there's clearly
a George Soros.
there is a hierarchy of people in the Democratic Party who are not happy with the prospect of Bernie Sanders maybe being a problem down ballot for a lot of people, and so they're forcing the issue.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. Like, if you want to have a future in this party, you know, you probably need to go ahead and endorse Smiley Joe. You know what's crazy is that Saturday was Biden has run for president three times since Ronald Reagan was president, and that is the first time that he has won a primary. It's the first state he's ever won.
South Carolina.
So he ran in 88, remember, and he got kind of drummed out by plagiarism accusation, which is laughable today, which is hilarious.
Oh, he could easily get away with that.
Yeah, and he could admit it and get away with it and not have to drop out. And then he ran in 08. And briefly, you know, and I think he didn't make it past Iowa.
Well, yeah, I mean, Obama won Iowa. Mm-hmm. He got out. Clinton won New Hampshire, but then it was done.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then, so then you come to 2008, and he finally won after Iowa, New Hampshire, Nevada, and he finally won South Carolina. Now, he won it handily. And it's interesting. I had a reporter call me from a paper out of state, and they were asking me about sort of what, and but of course, this was on Friday. And I didn't, you know, I kind of thought that Biden would win, but I had forgotten something very key about our state that is different than, say, South Carolina. And that is that Bloomberg got the ADC endorsement.
Ah, that's right.
And so wherein you would want, you would normally look to Biden to sort of romp in these southern states that are up on Super Tuesday. I'm not saying that he doesn't win. But it'd be very interesting to see if Bloomberg gets a much higher percentage of the African American vote. Where those percentages come down? I have no idea.
That's a fascinating point, and you're right. If probably a casual observer would think, or maybe somebody not from Alabama would think, well, yeah, Biden's going to be pretty strong, like just like he was in South Carolina. And that's probably, you know, generally true. Plus, he's got mm-hmm. the endorsements of Terry Sewell and Doug Jones, the state's mm-hmm. top two Democrats. Surely he should do really well with African Americans. But here we come to the dividing lines in the Democratic Party in Alabama. So the Alabama, for anybody that doesn't know, the Alabama Democratic Conference is basically the African American wing of the state Democratic Party. It's run by Joe Reed. He's been there for decades.
Forever.
I mean,
I think since it was an organization, right? Yeah.
Them getting behind Michael Bloomberg, which was like a month ago.
Yeah.
And Bloomberg had made his overtures, came to the state a couple of times, had a press conference with Mayor Reed, maybe before he was mayor even.
I believe that's right.
And so he's been making his overtures. It's really smart of Bloomberg to try to figure out that. I don't know what all the background is. I know that there are still those dividing lines. In fact, I think there's a book called Dividing Lines.
Right.
On my bookshelf. Just about the splits that exist really within the African American community of the Democratic Party in Alabama. Mm-hmm. It's been, you know, I'm not an expert on it, but it goes deep. And so, but functionally, what the ADC does, what Joe Reed's organization does, is have this yellow piece of paper.
The ballot.
It's the ballot that is, if you walk into a voting
marked ballot,
booth, it tells you how to vote. And that is a significant, significant advantage if you're a Democrat and you got that endorsement because it's an X next to your name. So Mike Bloomberg can have that.
Yeah, the big question to me is, especially locally, Todd and I are both in Montgomery, and this may function differently in different parts of the state. I know that it does, but Montgomery, we have three judges races, and we have three county commission races on the ballot. And the ADC, that's where the action is in Montgomery. I think the last Republican to carry Montgomery County, I think, was Reagan in 80. Wow. So it's been a long time since this is a Democratic county. And so you've got three somewhat contested judges races. And I know that, so it, what would be interesting to me is this, is there any movement between the folks that go into, you know, the voting booth, and do they vote for the ADC candidates in local races, right? Because those are low information races. We don't quite know who those people are. And then do they make their own decision at the top of the ballot about Biden, Bloomberg, or Sanders? Mm-hmm. Or does Bloomberg, you know, get that big push? I really don't know.
I don't either. But I'll tell you this. Just in the polling that we did, of course, all this was doing was measuring Trump versus the top Democratic candidates, mm-hmm. but it included Bloomberg, Biden, and Sanders. Bloomberg was winning. He had a clear 40% of the vote versus Trump, which was more than anybody else got. I think Biden had 38. I think Sanders had like 37.
Holy cow.
So And all of this was based off, at the time of the poll, Bloomberg had just done a ton of television advertising, and a lot of it, most of it, was geared toward the African-American community, talking about maternity issues and stuff like that. It's very much targeted toward black voters. So you got to think between that and... I mean, I've not seen a single commercial for Joe Biden.
No, I haven't either. The only two that I've seen are, I've seen a lot of Bloomberg, saw some Steyer.
Some Steyer.
And I saw a Liz Warren ad, which actually came, it was the framing, the first part of the framing was actually really good because it said, it starts out when you, it's either when you don't grow up rich or when you grow up poor, you have to work hard. And then it goes into all her, you know, usual stuff. But I did like that framing. Just one of those things. I'm a sucker for a Horatio Alger story.
Yeah.
No matter what. I will say one other factor about that I just, because I just got it emailed to me, is that the vote no is marked on the ADC ballot. Yeah. And so, and I don't know where all they distribute these days. I don't know if it's in every county or just in, you know, like just places that have disputed primaries, or I really don't know how it works. So, but I'm assuming that it gets out at least in the big cities.
Yeah, absolutely.
And your black belt counties.
So, I mean, tonight you're looking at Biden, Bloomberg right up there. And I mean, if Bloomberg carries Alabama and maybe some other,
that's a big deal.
This thing drags out, and really that hurts Biden.
It does,
because it just drags it out, makes it more likely that Sanders is the eventual nominee.
Well, and it's two, you know, it's sort of two candidates of the same ilk versus one other one, you know, and so those two are necessarily splitting votes. You know, if you're the Democrats and you're trying to avert a Sanders-helmed disaster, then what you really want to see in Alabama and in every state that's on the ballot today is you want to see Biden, you know, come in and sort of take control and him be the front runner now. And Bloomberg, you know, Bloomberg winning Alabama, maybe if he wins Alabama, you know, maybe small beer compared to what else you see on super, you know, on the Super Tuesday states.
That's true. That's true.
You know, we might be overrating our own importance.
Of course, it's just, it'll be a well executed plan as far as spending money and not missing that, and courting the ADC.
Yeah.
And you mentioned it when it was, might as well go ahead and move into the ballot conversation. So yeah,
I was trying to segue there.
Yeah, yeah.
But we kept, you know,
well,
digressing. That's okay. It's what we do.
It's a podcast. Don't worry about it. So yeah, Education Ballot Initiative. This is the State Board of Education, right? The legislature and the State Board of Education have disagreed and butted heads for
two guys that know more about this than most, than your average bear, having trouble spitting out what actually it does. So that's a good sign, guys.
I guess I could read the AP. But anyway, yeah, I'll just do that.
I mean, essentially, it makes it an appointed board. It goes from an elected to an appointed board.
Right. Alabama voters will decide a proposal to abolish the elected state school board and replace it with an appointed commission. Alabama Governor Kay Ivey is among the supporters of Amendment 1, which would end the current system of electing school board members by district. Appointees would be chosen by the governor and confirmed by the Senate under the new system.
Things that you really only that only come out when you have a conversation about this, and that I probably should have researched. But I wonder how many times in America that has an office been proposed to go from elected to appointed, and the people said sure,
right?
We'll vest more power in that guy, you know, because in Alabama we have a really good track record of you know of governors doing, you know, the right thing,
yeah,
right?
It is an interesting question, and I mean this goes to sort of not just the system of education governance, but the Constitution itself, yeah. Right? We can't do much of anything without a vote of the people. So you want to? I mean, they instituted the school board in 1969,
right?
Put it on the ballot, and we're gonna. What I found interesting about that, and I read up on this, and have some friends that are, you know, education nerds like me. When it was proposed like that in 1969, whatever proposal the governor came up with, Governor Brewer at the time, did not say we wanted an elected school board. It was basically the opposite. But,
oh, really?
But it was like, you know, legislature says, let's do an elected school board. And you know, things have been going great since 1960.
Well, it's a messy thing because there are, you know, what, there's 7 school boards members, is that right?
9.
Oh, yeah, 9. Okay, so they're almost as big. I was going to say they're bigger than a congressional district, but they're almost as big as a congressional district.
Yeah, they were set up to be congressional districts, yeah. Then everything changed.
Yeah. Which is huge, and you can't raise a whole lot of money, you know, and they're drawn kind of funkily, and, I mean, you know, Todd probably knows everybody on the school board. I don't.
We played this game the other day, and I only got to, like, 5.
Oh, wow. See, I mean, I don't know that.
Let's do it. All right, so there's...
Stephanie Bell.
Stephanie Bell. All right, okay. Jackie Ziegler.
Who?
Yeah. All right, now
we're... Wait a minute. So... Jackie Ziegler, that's Jim Ziegler's wife.
Yeah.
And there's a bill in the legislature to abolish the auditor's office.
Yeah.
Dude, you know that you have, like, come in like a bull in a china shop when the legislature's like, you know what we're going to do? We're going to get rid of both of these people by abolishing their office. Sorry, that just hit me.
What? Was it something I said?
Is it my tie?
Well, Jim Ziegler could certainly be described as a bull in a china shop, but that's just the point. Is that, and I look, maybe I could have named a few more, but
well, because Ella Bell died, right?
She, yeah, and they're actually rest filling her seat right now. The point is, look, I work in politics,
right.
I report on this stuff, and if you know, I'm not even sure, am I in Stephanie Bell's district or I'm in Ella Bell's? I don't even know.
I actually don't know either.
Yeah, so. I don't.
I think you're probably in the Ella Bell district, actually.
Probably.
Because of the way that they're drawn.
But who knows? And so that's sort of the point, is that there's little accountability on the school board, a state school board, because it's a nebulous position. We vote up and down the ballot on all kinds of positions. And how could we possibly know what they're up to if we don't even know who they are? And so anyway, this is on the ballot. I'm voting for it. A lot of, you know, I do a lot of radio and people are... give me a lot of pushback just as far as the taking away people's right to vote. And I hate to be this callous about it and this, I don't know, sort of elitist maybe about it. But, like, one thing that I come back to is the people haven't done a very good job with this responsibility.
Right.
Voters have done a really bad job of holding the school board accountable for some pretty bad, you know, slide backs and backsliding in our education. And if I had any confidence... that the voters were going to say, you know what? No, we're going to change the, you know, like right. They did here in Montgomery. What happened here in Montgomery? Voters got fed up.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of effort was put into changing the school board. It worked. I mean, now the dog gets caught in the car and they got to actually
correct.
Figure it out. But that happens on a local level.
It does.
On a state level, are you getting mad that our NAEP scores are down? It's not really something that...
Right.
So anyway, but you're right. It is a lot to ask people to take away their own enterprise, and so I don't know, gonna be pretty close. What do you think?
I really don't have a clue. I thought it was interesting that the ADC marked it no, not for the politics. I mean, I'm sure that really that's just a function of, like, the governor's for it, so let's be against it.
But that has an impact.
It definitely has an impact.
For people who have absolutely no idea what's going on, this yellow card said no.
Well, especially because it's ostensibly about improving education, and you can, like, you know, you can count on, for the most part, you can count on African Americans to want to vote to improve education, whether it's more money for the system, better governance for the system, whatever it is. You know, usually that's part of the base of any election, to improve education. Of any initiative that's the stated goal, you know what
right,
I mean? Because
right.
A lot of times people would differ about what those things mean, and I don't want anybody to get, you know, caught too far in the weeds on that. But I think it has an impact. I mean, I do. I think that I don't know that that's the death knell for it, but, you know, it is one of those things when it's weird that you have Alpha, who is, you know, sort of out front on it. And then you've got most of your conservative wing of the Republican Party that are dead set against it. And then you've got, you know, the African-American wing of the Democrat Party that's dead set against it. Just what's the quote there? Politics makes for strange bedfellows.
Yeah. Alpha has been out there. I mean, pretty significantly, and kind of maybe lit a fire under some other businesses, organizations that, you know, nobody really knew what was going to be a part of this YES effort. But going back to ADC, there is a bit of irony there, mm-hmm. because this new commission that would have been created, I mean, it still might, we'll see what happens.
Right.
This new commission that the governor wanted to create, or this legislation would create, there would end up being at least a couple of more black members, right?
Yes.
There would be greater representation for African Americans on this new commission than there is currently on the state school board.
Right.
So it's a little
ironic
that the ADC is coming out. But again, they're not gonna do
anything,
the governor any favors.
That's right.
And just generally speaking, it's easy to be no.
Correct. That's the easiest default position.
So, all right, well, moving on, because I know we got to go. Let's talk about Congress real quick.
Yeah.
Two big races. We start in the first district, which I know is being up here in Montgomery, maybe we're a little removed from it. But
it's as big a deal. I mean, it's a congressional seat. We only have eight of them.
And, well, it's open. Open seats don't come around that often.
Right.
We got two on the ballot this time, which is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
People sit around for years waiting for congressional seats to come open,
mm-hmm.
especially if they're tilted toward one party. These are both safe Republican seats. Bradley Byrne getting out early, him announcing for the Senate early allowed the first district for there to be a ton of good candidates,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, you can, whether you like him or not, you have to say that Bill Hightower, Jerry Carl, and Chris Pringle were high-profile, quality candidates that were going to be competitive.
But yeah, I mean, you've got a former state senator, and then a current county commissioner in Mobile only has three county commissioners. So yeah, you got to figure that's a big county commission district, which gives him an advantage. I think he actually represents more people than Chris Pringle does as a legislative member from Mobile. And so you have basically three, and Hightower was, you know, elected in what, 2013 and out in 2018. Mm-hmm. So he's very recently been on the ballot. Pringle, very recently been on the ballot. Carl, very recently been on the ballot. And Carl and Hightower kind of share a base, which is interesting. And they certainly don't, they're certainly fighting over it in this race. Club for Growth being heavy for Hightower, I think what we picked up is that makes him the favorite here. As in, like, he will probably be in the lead, is what I'm hearing. And then it's sort of neck and neck. You know something different, Carl were kind of, you know.
Carl has by far spent the most money.
Yes.
He's also a lot of that. He loaned himself, which,
yes,
you know, you can't pay all that back. So, I mean,
right,
that's you talk about putting your own skin in the game. So he's really invested a lot in his campaign. Pringle didn't have as much to spend, had to raise mm-hmm. all of it. But I did think his ads have been clever as far as the Pelosi build the wall thing and the.
I thought I said this to somebody yesterday, but the one thing about it to me is that the best part of any part of his ads is when he goes, "Freaking commies." And they should have made that, like, more of the focus. Or, like, somehow done, like, for Facebook or something.
It's kind
done
of an
outtakes
Easter,
yeah. or a... Because, I mean, that's Pringle. You know, if you know him, that's really him. I mean, and he comes across as himself in his ads. So much so that I might have faked it a little bit and not had his glasses on or something. Looks like you know what I mean? Like, there's some aesthetic stuff. But I'm one of those people, I make ads, so I criticize aesthetics.
But he's comfortable.
Chris is a great guy. It would not that anybody cares about our personal endorsements, but it would be, if I had my druthers, Pringle would win that race. And none of these people pay me, so. Even then, he doesn't even pay me, and I would endorse him.
It's gonna be tight. There's no indication that either one of them is winning. Again, it's really dumb to do any kind of tracking poll this late in the race if you're a campaign. You need that money to spend. So anyway, we'll see. But yeah, Hightower clearly in the runoff. We'll see.
Here's an interesting factor: because of the Senate race, because of Byrne being from down there, because of Sessions being basically from down there. Do you see higher turnout in District 1, and how does that affect either of or any of the candidates? The other thing is, How did nobody from Baldwin County get in this race? Baldwin County.
Right.
You know?
When if somebody had of a prominent...
They'd probably win.
Yeah, they might. I'd heard that there were several candidates that could have been competitive but didn't for different reasons.
Yeah.
And then these three kind of got out front. So it is crazy. As much as Baldwin County has just blown up over the years.
I mean,
Bradley's from Baldwin County.
Yeah. In the Republican primary in 18, Baldwin voted more people than Mobile did.
Somewhere there's a Mobile conspiracy, you know.
Yeah.
There's, you know, being from Mobile is a pretty big deal, right?
Oh, very much so. Which is why I thought that somebody from Baldwin County could go, you know, could be the, especially when you have two or three people from the heart of Mobile, why wouldn't you be the guy that's like, get Baldwin County and then the pieces of what, Escambia and Monroe and all that, that whatever's in there, right? And be like, it's us against them. Like, they want everything. They get everything. Well, guess what? When Dave Mowry's the congressman, that ain't going to happen. We're going to reverse this trend.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. But to your question about turnout, yes, I think Mobile and Baldwin County have the potential to be some of the highest around in the whole state just because there's a lot of action on that right now. Mm-hmm. And it's a very competitive race.
Mm-hmm.
They also haven't attacked each other.
Right.
So, like, over in the second district, we'll get to in a minute, mm-hmm. a lot of attacking going on. I've not seen any of that in the first district. Maybe there's been some that I've not noticed, but it's basically been promoting themselves. And I'm just saying that, you know, there's a lot of, there should be a very high turnout
yeah.
area. But we'll see.
Yeah.
Getting to the second, which we get inundated with all the advertising from the second being here in Montgomery. So we're a little more in tune with this, what's going on here. And no surprise that, yes, Jeff Coleman is winning this race. I guess the question is how much?
Yeah. Where does he come in tonight when we're counting the votes?
Right. Because it, you know, at one point I saw a number as high as 44% that were going to vote for him. I think that was back in January or maybe December. So it was clearly on a trajectory heading that way to maybe avoiding a runoff. The last poll that I saw, I mean, had him down in the low 30s.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's most definitely heading to a runoff if you would believe all these numbers.
Right. That's a big question, though. I mean, the veracity of, especially the only, you know, available public polling from the last 2 weeks or whatever.
Right.
The only released polling.
To clarify, it was the Alabama Forestry Association. I mean, it was weird because it was the day we published Inside Alabama yeah. Politics. And I think I wrote, or you mm-hmm. or I, one of us wrote, there's no fresh polling
right.
in this AL2 race,
and like, then
right
bang.
When we published, here's the Forestry Association with new polling showing Jeff Coleman as low as 30, Jessica Taylor right there at 18%, but Barry Moore right behind her with 16%, and Troy King at 15. That's crazy, and that's a very tight three-way race for second place, which early on in this race may not have mattered, but I think there's probably going to be a runoff now. And if,
yeah,
you know, so I think it will matter.
Yeah, it's kind of wild. And I don't know that I can say that those numbers are wrong, but like they kind of don't seem right because, you know, has anybody attacked Troy King? Because I don't know how Troy could go from winning every county in the district, you know, against Steve Marshall, who won big. Otherwise,
mm-hmm.
I don't know how he would go from, you know, 60 or 70% name ID at the start to now under the other two without somebody attacking him. I'm not saying that they haven't.
There's been some mail, but I don't know. There's been Terry Hasdorf has had.
Yeah, that's right.
We don't. Which would you write well, the curious case?
Yeah,
Terry Hasdorf.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I got a text from her.
It was that great. Make America
or from
great.
The yeah make, yeah I got a text from the PAC. Well, and it's so close that it's, I mean, we're talking about it in terms of, you know, of it being her. That's how little they've done to disguise the fact that, you know, the super PAC's working on her behalf or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, who knows where she comes in at? I mean, she's frankly done probably better voter contact than just about anybody else.
Yeah.
And so...
Also, I mean, just for the sake of the ballot, it's another woman on the ballot.
Yeah.
That can't be good for Jessica Taylor.
Does the sheer amount of Jeff Coleman ads... You know, I've had a lot of people ask me this. Does the sheer amount of ads at some point turn people off? I am always under the impression, no, that it's impossible to advertise too much.
I mean, I agree. And if I'm going to be anything, I'm going to be the guy that has too many ads. Why not just have universal name ID? In this case, yeah, when you get called the Alex Shannara,
right?
But I just don't see how it's a negative. The one thing somebody pointed this out to me the other day, their campaign has really leaned on his business and building this business, his mm-hmm. family, and the cool optics of the trucking and all that. And I remember when they first came out with that, probably the very first ad, I thought, yeah, that's pretty cool,
honk, right? Honk,
you know, like I'm getting this image of the, you know, asking the truck drivers to honk. And so it's just cool looking. But the fact that the opponent's attacks have been about his moving company,
mm-hmm.
right? About his the dispute with the federal government, mm-hmm. ended up paying a settlement. And and by the way, let me point out something that I think they probably could have been saying all along. The federal government still does business with them.
Yeah, I definitely think that they seem wholly unprepared for this attack, which is weird. And I'm not saying that they were, but they seem it, because it's just there's not enough pushback in terms of, you know, there's the other thing is that admit nothing, deny everything, point fingers. You know, there's up there kind of they got the commercial where he's just kind of trying to explain it. He says that I think they could have set it up from the beginning, you know, of. I don't know. I guess maybe what like some emotion on what moving as a, you know, moving military families means. I'm an Army brat, so it probably speaks to me a little bit more. But they could have done something about how it's just how basically it's like their honor to this is the way that they serve or whatever, you know. And so then set it up so that when you attack him about that, you're actually attacking the people that he's moving.
Ah, interesting. I didn't think about that. Well, they certainly, like I said, it made the moving part of it. So I guess, and somebody had mentioned this to me, that okay, when you get effectively attacked on that, mm-hmm. fair or unfair, but effectively, then every time you run something about trucking, it sort of reminds people
yeah,
of that, right?
Maybe.
And so maybe that's why you're seeing fewer ads about trucks and more about family and things like that.
Yeah, I just the other question is, so I don't think quantity-wise in terms of like, the number of ads, like in the aggregate, that you've run 20,000 ads or whatever. I think that that's good for him, and he probably could have done more. My question is did they let any one message burn in long enough, or were they like a little bit too, it seems like they've had like 10 ads, which is...
It's at least seven, right?
Which is a lot, especially when you're really only being hit on one thing, and you're just kind of like moving... to another ad that may or may not be as effective as the other one. I've had a lot of women, you know, say that they didn't like the baseball bat ad, but didn't hurt. Similar ad didn't hurt Brian Kemp in Georgia. So, you know, sometimes, as you know, people won't tell you that they like the other candidate. They'll just tell you what they don't like about this guy, yeah. But not their motivation. So sometimes it's that, but I mean, I frankly just don't know. I mean, I guess we'll find out this evening when votes start coming in.
Not to get too much into predictions, but I think that Jeff Coleman will probably get at 40 or near 40.
Yeah, I mean his goal should be at least 40, right? I mean, I would think internally that's what they're hoping to hit with the amount of money that they've spent. It's very hard to win without a runoff, or it's very hard to get into the 40s when you have, you know, you have a former attorney general who was on the ballot in 2018. Mm-hmm. You have a former state rep from the next, you know, the next county over, who was, you know, around for, he was two terms, right? Yeah. 10 and 14, is that right?
I think so.
Yeah.
He ended up leaving office, I think.
Yeah. But I mean, okay, but, you know, he's...
That's not right. No, he continued to serve. He was acquitted and all that. Yeah.
And he's a known quantity, though, and you know, known to be a veteran and that type of stuff. Campaigning.
He also pulled 19%
yeah.
in 2018.
Right?
Had to go back and look at that.
Yeah.
I mean, it was Martha Roby and Bobby Wright that went to the runoff.
Right,
but he's right there behind Wright at 19%.
That's right. And then Jessica Taylor, who... probably has, you know, some of the better ads that I've seen this whole cycle, at least in terms of attention grabbing. You know, the question to me is who has done enough communication to combat Coleman, you know, in terms of just his sheer name ID? Who's done enough communication to say that, to make people not just default to voting for Jeff Coleman?
Right.
And frankly, I don't know the answer. I think Moore is on, it was on TV this whole week. I know that Troy booked a bunch and then canceled it, so I don't know how much he actually had. And I think that Taylor had like 2,500 points in Montgomery and 1,000 in Dothan in the aggregate.
That's not bad. I mean, for you can only do what you can afford.
Yeah, that's right.
They had some late money come in.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, always, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not. It just is, you know.
You needed that in January when.
But. I mean, yeah, because Coleman's done 11,000 GRPs, and bought every billboard between the border and Clanton.
It's really something to see. And let me just say one weird thing about doing this for a living now and writing about politics and publishing. Is especially when it comes to campaigns like this, you know all of them.
Yeah.
Like, I know all these candidates.
Yeah, me too.
Worked in some capacity with all of them. And so it's just weird to be in a position where you're, you know, judging, I guess, their campaign.
I'll go one better. I know and like all of them. You know, I'm not saying that you don't. I'm just saying that, like, I mean, truly, there's not a, you know, there's not a candidate in this race that, well, I don't know Bob Rodgers, who I saw a TV ad for yesterday.
How about that?
I was home getting ready, and I had a thing that, at my son's school, and so, and I had Jeopardy on at 9:30, and he was the lead into Jeopardy. Woo boy! If you were trying to make a parody of a bad ad, you wouldn't have gotten this.
Oh, that's good.
Poor guy.
I want to see that.
And the funny thing is, message not terrible. You know, I mean, he talks about how he's a veteran and that we need term limits and draining the swamp and all that. Yeah. But then at the end, like, his logo comes up, but it's obvious that they put it up in, like, one, like, the top's blue and the bottom's red, and they're not even like aligned on the left justification.
Oh,
like, they're out of sync with each other. One's a little bit indented.
Well, sometimes the clip art can let you down.
Oh, it's just, you know, I know, but, like, come on, man. Well, if you're gonna pay the filing fee, at least pay to get that done right.
Well, the thing is, he ran last time too.
Did he? I don't know who he is.
He did. He ran last time too. I just don't understand that. You know, like, okay, let's do it again. And anyway, so what we're looking for tonight is obviously Coleman's in the runoff. Who else is? You got a legit three-way race between Troy King, Jessica Taylor, and Barry Moore. And he could win. Last thing, real quickly, Supreme Court.
Yeah. Well, the other thing that I will say about any of the runoffs, whether it's Senate or the House races, is, and I haven't looked at this, but I'm going to, as like pretty much as soon as we stop recording here, just for my own edification, who's booked for the next 2 weeks or the next 3 weeks? That'll tell you a lot. Because in
you mean, TV?
Yeah. Purchases. Yeah. Who's already bought time?
Yeah. Well, in the second district, I don't know if anybody can afford to.
Except Jeff.
Right. I mean, and surely he's booked up.
But I mean, but here's the thing. So if he has, and then somebody gets in a runoff, I mean, they basically have a week for the money to matter, or he's just going to nuke them.
Yeah.
I mean, if I was him and I had a campaign that well funded, I would have all the oppo, I would have it all cut with the, you know, 15 seconds that goes, you know, either starts good or starts bad. You know, I'd have the 15 good seconds about me. Ready to go, and I'd be just fill in the zzz, put that in there, ship it to stations.
Well, and it won't probably be that much, but Club for Growth has $300,000, I think, reserved for the runoff
against Bradley, right?
Right. I was thinking for the first congressional district to hit whoever is the candidate.
Oh, that's right, against Hightower. That's right.
So that's significant.
That's a lot of money too in that district. That's
All right.
All right. Anyway,
Who wins, Cam Ward or Greg Shaw?
Whew, you put me on the spot, huh?
Well, I mean, I'm not gonna make a prediction, but
I really don't know. I mean, I hate to be like that. I just, I haven't seen a single one of their ads on TV in Montgomery.
I've seen both of them. I've seen Shaw's more.
I gotcha. And look, of the people that I deal with, I don't know Greg Shaw at all. I don't think I've ever met him. I do know Cam. I think Cam's a good public servant, and. You know, would do well in the job. That doesn't tell you, you know, I don't know if Greg Shaw does or doesn't do a good job. I do know that Cam is like one of the most transparent and like, you know, what constituent service wise and all that. I mean, we could call Cam Ward right now and get him on the line, like during this podcast if we wanted to. Or he'd call us back before it was over and we're ending on this. You know what I mean? He just like bing, bing, bing. And so, you know, I kind of hope for his sake that he does it. It's a big leap. Because, you know, he's going from a state Senate district, which is, you know, one of 35 to statewide. But I think they kind of started out even in terms of name ID. And so I just, you know, I really can't call it. Neither of them has really done the, like, we've been involved in Supreme Court races when they were, I mean, where it was like bigger than the governor's race.
Yeah.
You had millions of dollars spent. And to think that like an email wouldn't be going out every day, or, you know, some kind of communications of a press release or micro-targeted ads talking about something, tort reform, you know, anything.
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
Yeah,
I think it's going to be a really close finish. The polling was close. I don't think anything is really differentiated. So, yeah, I think it's going to be a really close finish. But, again.
I will say that, you know, if we dial back to our premise about Bradley Byrne and that he can turn out his district, what's to say, because Matt Friday's on the district on the ballot, too, if they can turn out, say, Shelby County and Chilton County, and then, you know, the Republican part of Jefferson County, which is actually still a pretty significant vote in terms of sheer numbers, like, does the turnout from those places to vote for their local guys, Ward and Friday, does that carry Ward over Shaw? I don't know.
We're going to be watching.
Something to think about.
All right. Well,
this was fun, man.
It was fun. Thanks for coming in.
We'll have to do a recap and, for next week, and then we'll have a couple week break, huh?
Yeah, I'm gonna get some sleep.
Yeah, well, we all need to do that, at least until, you know, tomorrow morning. We got to get up and do it all over again.